Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Rated or Dated in the New World Order. I'm Mickey Noonan and I am joined, as will be as ever, by Hannah Dunleavy. Hannah, hello.
I don't know what that sentence meant, but great, hello.
And by Jen Offord. Jen Offord, hello.
Hello.
I gave you your full name like I was cross with you, but I am not cross with you, and it's important that you know that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you not being cross with me.
Is it your full name, Jen?
Jennifer, technically, but no middle names.
No middle name.
Nearly.
You don't have a middle name?
No, my parents didn't see the point. They liked our first names and they are lazy, apparently, so.
Lazy.
Anna, what's your middle name? Christian, isn't it?
It is Christian. Talking of lazy parents, they thought of a name for a girl and a name for a boy, and then they just didn't think any further.
Mickey, what's yours?
I'm Michaela Louise Noonan, if you want to be really cross with me. It's best when you shout it up the stairs. That's when I know that I'm in real trouble. Talking of being in real trouble with your parents, there's a segue.
Oi.
Hannah, why am I wearing this parka when it's actually starting to get sunny? Explain yourself.
Because this week we watched East is East, written by Ayub Khan Din and based on his semi-autobiographical play of the same name. Coming in early with a question, can anyone tell me what links this film and Windsor Davis?
Just thinking of it ain't our fault, Mum. Oh, I used to love Windsor Davis's moustache. Was he in something with Ompuri?
No, it's The Ballad of East and West, the first line of which provides the title of surely dated British sitcom Never the Twain, as well as East is East and its sequel West is West. I've never seen that.
No, me neither.
No sequels. In interviews given around the time the film came out, Khan Din was keen to stress that East is East is not about British culture or Muslim culture, but simply about his life and his family. Hark at him managing to predict Twitter by more than a decade. Does anyone want to guess which one of the Khan boys is the writer's substitute? Which one is supposed to be him?
It's Sajid, isn't it?
I think... I've forgotten his name already.
Okay, Mickey's right. It's Sajid. While I'm asking questions, have either of you seen this film before?
Yes.
Yes.
At the time?
Yes, I think at the time and since the time.
I think it must have been around the time. I think I've only seen it once, though.
I have seen this film many times, starting at the time. But that said, I probably haven't seen it for about 10 years before I sat down to watch it.
Yeah, I've not seen it for a long time.
Okay, it was mostly positively reviewed, has 78% on Rotten Tomatoes and made around £19 million from a budget of £1.9 million, which is great.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
Just under half of which was made in Europe and America, which is also great. And it went great guns in award seasons, winning Best British Film at the BAFTAs and Best Comedy Film at the British Comedy Awards. Ompuri was nominated for the Best Actor BAFTA. Khan Din won a British Independent Film Award and a London Critics Circle Film Award for his screenplay. And director Damien O'Donnell won an Empire Award and an Evening Standard British Film Award. The film also gave huge career boosts to its younger stars, who include Jimmy Mistry, Archie Panjabi, Ian Aspinall and Chris Bisson, and brought Puri, who was pretty universally regarded to be one of the best actors in the world, to the attention of a mainstream UK audience. It also stars Linda Bassett, my heart, Ruth Jones, John Barden, and a steam ceiling Leslie Nichol, who's "wash your bastard curtains" line might actually top "you mean you crap out of a window" for the best line of her career. What does that come from?
I don't know where that comes from.
Blackadder. Back to East is East. Let's have some plot. It's 1971 and George Khan is an immigrant from Pakistan living in Salford with his second family, white working class wife Ella and their seven kids. His first family remain in Pakistan, close to fighting in the Bangladesh Liberation War, so that war is one of his major preoccupations. The other is to improve his standing in the local Muslim community, which he intends to do by marrying his mixed-race children into well-respected families. His mostly westernised kids aren't so keen on the idea, and when the eldest son, Nazir, who is, it is hinted, gay, flees his marriage ceremony, George cuts him out of their lives and moves on to his next eldest sons, Abdul, the sensible one, and Tariq, the rebellious one. All hell inevitably breaks loose. Okay, so this isn't really a question, it's more of a statement, but feel free to chime in with your thoughts. One of the things we've learned doing ROD is that timing is absolutely everything. And I don't think we've watched a film where that's more clear, because this film had a really small window in which to exist. And by that, I mean it came after the Labour election victory in 1997, when multiculturalism was no longer a dirty word. And the country, and therefore the British film industry, was very optimistic and spending a lot of money.
Cool, Britannia.
There we go. But it came before September the 11th, when storylines about Muslims in the arts became dominated by terrorism. So it had a really small window to hit.
I don't really have anything to add to that, Hannah. I think it's a very astute observation. I guess because it was a play, then it already existed. But I think the film version of it, yeah, absolutely hit the money there.
I think it could have existed after September the 11th. I think it would have been good if it existed after September the 11th. But yeah, I guess audiences maybe would have been a bit less receptive to it. But yeah, I mostly agree with Mickey and think that that's an astute observation.
Thank you. So, this film features almost all contemporaneous music, except at the end when it uses Moving by Supergrass. And I think that's a really good pick, because Moving is essentially two different songs happening at the same time. And I think East is East is actually two different films happening at the same time. On the one hand, we've got this vibrant, sometimes almost pantomimic comedy. And on the other hand, there's this gritty drama about a family being ruled with an iron fist, and it's often an actual fist. And for me, much as I could praise this film for hours, I've got to say those two elements don't always rub along well together.
I think you're correct. Just to go back to Moving for a moment, I really, really fucking hate one of the parts of that song and really love the other part of that song. And whilst that isn't the same with East is East, because I like both of the elements equally, I do think sometimes they don't mesh very, very well. And I'd also chuck in there that actually it's a tragedy well in many ways. It starts off all bouncy and funny and playful and all the hiding from the dad. But then when the violence and also the sort of racism and discomfort kick in, it kicks in a lot bigger, I guess. And maybe that's the point of the comedy. But sometimes they do just feel like two very different worlds being forced together.
Yeah.
Isn't that the British way, though? Aren't there quite a lot of British films that are sort of part funny, part gritty, awful, tragic sadness?
Absolutely.
Like The Full Monty, yeah. Like Brastoff, like loads of British films that we've seen. I mean, I know what you mean. Like, it's not, maybe the humour exists quite separately. Like, I know what you mean, but to me, that feels like quite a British film trait.
I think for me, there's a really incredible scene. They're all sitting watching the Clangers on telly and nobody's actually watching the telly.
Yeah.
You can feel the atmosphere in that house. There's been this enormous fight and it's just been terrible. Jimmy Mystery's just sitting at the table and he keeps looking over to his mum, and you know they're building up to have a fight now. You know that's coming. And the atmosphere is really thick in that scene. And then the following scene, he goes off to visit the older brother and there's the big dogs and it's all very camp. And
they're in a hat paradise. Yeah.
In fact, when the girls are chasing him up the road carrying the suitcases, that's almost farcical. And it comes so soon after that incredibly gritty scene about what it's like to be in the aftermath of something terrible happening and you're all just off in your own worlds.
And I'd go so far as to say, or to bounce off that, I understand why Stella's there, the granddaughter of the street's massive racist who's like a big Enoch Powell fan, played by Jim Brannigan. That's his
John Barden,
who, you know, doesn't have much to do but does it very, very well, and it's clearly very important for the story. But Stella and Peggy, whoever Ruth Jones is, they don't really work for me. And there's a real reliance on fat jokes there that I found really annoying as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I do understand why they're there for, like, Tariq is having it off with this white girl whose granddad wouldn't approve and his dad wouldn't approve. But yeah, I found their characters so underdrawn in comparison to everyone else in it that I could have lost them quite easily.
Okay, let's talk about George. And I say this as someone who often feels conflicted about my own father. It seems to me that Carndin has conflicted feelings about George.
Oh, gotcha.
And while I can see how people could find him sympathetic, I mean, his neighbour is just one of many, many racists he will meet every day. I do struggle. Maybe if I was a man or a parent or not white, I'd feel a bit differently. But I have to say, hats off to Carndin and Puri, because George is a fully realised character. And you don't have to like what he's doing to understand why he's doing it. That bit is really clear.
I think as well, it's very clear that he's got those mixed feelings, because he is both George and he is Genghis to his kids, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's like this very violent, patriarchal iron fist, as you described earlier. And I think my opinions on George have shifted this time when I watched it. And I don't like him. I think he's awful. I don't like the fact that he's an abusive man and kind of gets away with it. By the end, we see that the family is sort of resetting back into its groove again. And I read the plot for West is West, and he's very much still like making his family do stuff that they don't want to do. But I have a sympathy with this situation that maybe I didn't have the first time I watched it, and I was just very angry at him, in that he doesn't fit in anywhere.
Yeah.
He is trying to find his place in the world. He has broken the standards that he wants to set for his own family. He doesn't fit in within the white community, and he doesn't fit in within the Pakistani community. He doesn't feel at home anywhere, and he is a very frightened man.
Yeah.
And I think I've only just seen how frightened he is in this
watch. There's a bit in it that I think I've only watched it once before, but there's a bit in it that I certainly didn't pick up on, or if I did the first time around, I didn't remember it, where he's got the TV on and they're talking about like the lonely rock that is Earth or whatever. And I was like, well, that's the whole point, isn't it? This guy's lonely, he's sad, he's, you know, an alien in his world. Because it's difficult, isn't it? You're a bit like, have they been apologetic for the fact that he like abuses his wife? But I don't think they have. I guess the point is that people can do awful things and yet, you know, like, both things can be true. Do you know what I mean? I think that he's not having a very nice time. And I found it a lot sadder than I remember finding it in the past. It's very clearly about being caught between these two cultures for everyone involved, like for, you know, for the kids, for him, but for his wife as well. I think it's really...
Well, I'm going to get to that as well. I think the depiction of domestic violence is interesting. And I think because it comes from a semi-autobiographical standpoint, we have a very clinical idea of looking at domestic violence and saying women don't leave because they're scared, and all of these things are true, all of them. But I think this film also does throw in the truth is that abusive people aren't abusive all the time, and it's possible to absolutely love them in the period when they're not being abusive. And I think that comes from a very different place, and I'm not saying it's right, but I think it's common.
I think that's sort of almost what I meant by the both things can be true, except I didn't say what the other thing was. But like, yeah, that you can be in, to all intents and purposes, in a loving relationship, because I think they are in a loving relationship, but with someone who has a horrible temper, who has perhaps been brought up in a culture where this is an acceptable recourse. Do you know what I mean?
And I think is living in a culture where it's an acceptable recourse.
Yeah.
It's set in the very early 70s. It came out in 1999, just 4 years after rape in marriage was made illegal. this, you know, is of its
time. It's not like we've eradicated it, is it? Like, it's 2024.
Absolutely. And I also think there are hints that Ella would belt the kids. I think there are hints that she is also violent towards the kids. There's a couple of times where she says, I love you. And again, I remember the campaigns around, you've got to stop smacking your kids. That was in our lifetime. And we were born after this is set.
Yeah. If this film came out today, some people, maybe even us, would say, yeah, but what's it like being a mixed race girl growing up in that house? Because Mina doesn't really get a lot of time. But what I think it does show in great detail is what it's like to just be a woman who's married into a different culture, but also just to be a working class mother in the 1970s and possibly still today, you know, just with more white goods. I mean, regular listeners know I love Linda Bassett, but holy crap, she is like 20 shades of wonderful in this.
Oh, she's magnificent.
It's a really loving portrayal of mothers.
Yeah, she's fierce. And what I just said about her maybe giving them a smack notwithstanding, because again, it was absolutely accepted that you would maybe do that with your kids. She loves them so fiercely and is so compromised by her love for her husband at the same time.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And you asked about Mina, and there's a really poignant scene for both of them, even though Mina doesn't see it, when she asks when her friend, her female friend who has been married.
Oh, that's so sad. That
similar
scene.
Family, like Pakistani guy has married a working class white woman. Their daughter has got married and has gone to Pakistan. She says, oh, when's she coming back? And Ella just sort of shakes her head and kind of goes, oh, Mina, go hang out with your brothers. And then the mum just bursts into tears because she is not coming back. And I think that's all it needed, right? That scene says
it's incredible.
So much.
Yeah.
Ella is such a sympathetic, well-drawn character, full of contradictions and collusions and compromise. I think she's absolutely wonderful.
Agreed.
I think in many ways she's got the most interesting, her story's kind of the most interesting, because she's married into a different culture and she has the kids that are going to be raised culturally different to how she was raised. But also, she's, you know, the struggles that she has are kind of multifaceted, aren't they? Because she's married to a Pakistani man in a time where, you know, race relations were really tricky, and she's bringing up her kids knowing that they're going to face these struggles that maybe she hasn't had, but also she's working class and she's got all of that side of things to deal with as well, and she's a woman. So I think, like, in a lot of ways, her story, or like the facets to her story, are the most interesting.
It says a lot about women who marry into different cultures, but I think just think it says a lot about a woman's lot in the 1970s, or certainly a working class woman's lot.
That scene where she tells her prospective in-laws to sling their hook is just incredible, because she's sitting there, she's trying to do the right thing, and they are just showering insult after insult on her home and how she raises her kids. And when she finally snaps, all of those tensions that have been bubbling under, all of that pride she has in her family, and rightly so, because she's got all of these, like, curious, smart, funny, warm. The warmth of this film is incredible. The family warmth, the interaction, these kids. And she just goes, nah, I've had it, off. And it's just joyous to see her stand up for herself and stand up for her family.
Mm. Yeah. Her delivery is amazing. So many lines where she just says to him, and you, Pablo fucking Picasso. it's amazing. Okay, we're going to take a break. Back in a bit to chat about more, including the North, with our expert on the North.
Hello.
Mickey Noonan.
Hiya.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier the fat jokes. I mean, this film is pretty equal opportunity offensive. You know, there's racism, and there's lots of racist words. There's some homophobia coming from Tarek, who wants to move in with his brother, right up to the point that he suspects his brother's living with his boyfriend. And then he's like, no, I'd rather go home. You know, there's lots of sexism. There's a lot of fat jokes. There are the full gambit. How do you think all of those stand up?
They're of their time, aren't they? This 1971, there was a lot of racism. There was a lot of sexism. There was a lot of homophobia. I don't think any of it's presented. The fat jokes are a bit different. We can come back to that. But I think, like, everything else is a depiction of what it would have been like at the time, and I don't think it's held up in any way as, like, aspirational. It's not like, oh, we're homophobic,
great, that's cool. It's just like, that's what it would have been like. Like, the racism, that's what it would have been like. The P word is used with wild abandon, but that is what it would have been like. And also, the writer is Pakistani, so he, you know, gets to say it, doesn't he? But the fat jokes are unnecessary. That's not like a time thing. That's just a cheap lols thing.
I agree with you. And isn't it sad that they're the ones that probably don't exist as much? People are a bit more careful around. Because I don't think the sad thing is that all of this is in the film. I think the sad thing is it's still happening outside of the film in 2024.
Yeah. Did it make you feel nostalgic for the North, Nikki?
It did make me feel nostalgic for the North. Those terraced houses and, the red brick of Manchester. I think they've got it smashing. They've really got it spot on. It's very well observed. Obviously, I'm a little bit too young to have had a tin bath, but I certainly got washed in the sink sometimes. And that kind of make-do mend, lots of people in a room. But I know that's not just Northern. I know, like, we've all come from families that have had too many people in too small a house a lot of the time. I love the way they're like, all right, our kids, all of the time. Just like, I remember when my bestie Nick first met my sister, he really believed her name was R. Isla, just because it's never just Isla, it's just always R. Isla, and she's in my phone as R. Isla. So yeah, I really like that they've caught that. Although I will say, when they drive across the snake pass and end up in Bradford, that's not a correct journey. I just got to put that out there. I was like, the snake pass doesn't go to Bradford. Not at all. I mean, you can get there eventually, but not quite as direct as they've made it.
I don't know what a snake pass is, Mickey.
It's the road they travel on where she goes, oh, they filmed the Dam Busters here, you know, which my mum used to say every time we travelled on it as well. So that also felt very familiar. On a positive note that's sort of related, after I watched East is East, an advert came on because there is a mayoral election going on in London at the moment. And then advert came on for Sadiq Khan. And I thought, that's really interesting, because that wouldn't have been a thing in 1971. So it did make me feel a little bit hopeful that stuff has shifted in the past quarter of a century, half a century.
Let's hope when this goes out, Susan Hall hasn't been elected.
Fucking hell, there's so many reasons I hope that.
And also, if this had got out last week, the leader of Scotland would also have been a second generation Muslim. So, you know, things have improved. You are correct. But he's gone now. So we can't make that point. Okay, last question. Well, last but one. East is East, rated or dated?
Rated.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely rated, yeah. It's a lot sadder than I remember it being.
When it's described as a comedy, the comedy is the warmth of the family, that really works for me, but the kind of farcical bits do not. The two sisters that they're going to get married to, like, they're kind of pantomime dame-like and doesn't work for me. But yeah, the tragedy and the sort of social study of it, I think, is absolutely cracking.
I 100% agree. Rated. Last question. What are we watching next time?
It's me, isn't it? Lads, I deliberately didn't pick Apocalypse Now because I think you've both said before that you don't like it. And
thank
it is
you.
Quite long.
The only time I've seen it was at an event, a cinema event at Duxford. Yeah. And I saw it projected onto the side of a helicopter.
I mean, that's the way to watch it, isn't it?
Yeah. So the first time I saw it was at the BFI, because I'd never seen it and it was on at the BFI. So I was like, I'm going to go and see this at a cinema.
What were they projecting it on?
Just a normal screen, mate. But I was a bit like, oh, maybe I enjoyed that more than I would have done if I'd seen it on a TV the first time around. But anyway, so I didn't pick that. So instead, I picked Tea with Mussolini.
I don't know why,
but I want to ask, has it got Cher in it?
It's got Cher in it. Cher making a, I think, third or fourth appearance on Rated or Dated.
Cher, Rated or Dated.
Standard issue for all women.